Very excited to be beginning the shiurim and the zman, especially with such a complicated but fascinating limud. We'll speak about more in just a minute. So just a few preliminary issues as these sheets are going around. So first, again, the list is going around with chavrusas. If anybody has chavrusa issues, you know, it's it doesn't take long for these things, you know, to develop. So the shiur assistants are here to help you, and if you have you know, bigger issues, you can come to me as well. The shiur assistants, we want to thank them in advance. David is, you know, already the veteran, who's the returning shiur assistant, and then we decided to go with this fellow Itamar. Where is he? Where is Itamar? Oh, there he is. He moved. Right? He moved to the yeah, you were never in the corner. You were in the last seat?
Last 2 years.
Okay, so Itamar Rosenzweig, you know, who is the second shiur assistant, and both of them will be happy to help you with your chavrusa needs and other needs, other issues. Feel free to, you know, discuss anything you want with them, you know, day or night. They've assured me that they're on call 24 hours a day, and right?
And everybody wants Rebbe's cell phone number.
Exactly. Okay, so that's the schedule. This year, more generally, as you know, on we're going to make, as we did the other years, Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday. Monday, we try to have a hashkafa topic. Last year, we were doing the Silas Yesharim. We didn't, you know, questions whether we'll continue with that or not, that's still to be negotiated. I have at least to give a couple because I have to coordinate my Ish Halacha and Nefesh HaChaim, which we did a little bit, but so at least a couple we have. You know, it's the Mondays are open for other, either a special topic anytime or other suggestions. The Mesilas Yesharim actually came from I'm trying to remember who last year. Who did it come from? Sam? I thought it was Sam's suggestion. And I think, you know, almost every year it's been a Talmud-suggested theme for the year. So if you have an ambitious idea or just an idea, don't hesitate and let me know. Again, we'll try to meet all the new people in this year in the next couple of weeks. Anybody who, again, we'll try to coordinate with Itamar and David in terms of organizing that. But anybody who has a more immediate need, you know, new or veteran, just let me know. Again, I'll try to be as accessible as possible. In general, it's my interest to get to know each and every one of you. I say this every year. It's really true. In many cases, I succeed. But it really requires, you know, both, you know, both of us, in order for it to succeed, there are more of you than there are of me. So it just takes a little initiative sometimes, but you should know that it's an initiative which I welcome, and you shouldn't let you know, humility or shyness you know, prevent you from trying to pursue something that you're interested in or need, or just the desire to develop a relationship, which I think is a critical part of Talmud Torah. Your growth in learning and in your shemayim is really what the yeshiva is about, and you know, anything that we can do to facilitate that, you know, that is consistent with that, which requires, you know, my effort and your initiative, we should really do. So I encourage everybody to, you know, make the appointments, and if you don't have an appointment, you can come over to me also. And, you know, the appointments are just a vehicle. They're not the only vehicle. And that's the way it should be. I want to thank, again, Itamar and David for taking the responsibility in advance. And, again, they're an important aspect of the structure in all of this. We're going to begin the beginning of Yevamos. The Yeshiva is learning the first parak. you got the Maror Makomos for some preliminary topics. The Yevamos is a very interesting limud. We'll talk about the substance of it in just a second. But even structurally, Yevamos is a very spread out but interconnected limud. Maybe more so than almost any other limud. One theme which is spread out over so many prakim. That makes it important to see as much as you can, but of course there's a certain tension. You know, on one hand you want to see as much as you can, on the other hand you want to understand it and integrate it. You know, it's the old tension of Bikias and Iyun, but in the context of Yevamos it's even a little bit more challenging, I'd say, just because of the interconnectedness is greater and the diffusion is greater. So we'll try to move a little more quickly in the Dapim, but also to integrate as we're going on. Mostly we're going to be focusing on the Yevamos topics. Some of you have asked me this question, which is one of the reasons I want to address it in Meirosh. Like any Masechta, there's the main theme, and there are the things that, you know, come up, agav, you know, on the page. Last year we learned Pesachim, so the main theme, the bigger theme was Pesachim, but the main theme of the year clearly was Macholos Asuros and Yisurei Hana. Now, in the context of Macholos Asuros and Yisurei Hana, so the fact that other things come up on the daf, if the theme is really Macholos Asuros and Yisurei Hana, which it was, so that's not a distraction. On the contrary, the variety of Macholos Asuros and Yisurei Hana are part of the story, how they were to relate to each other. I'm not going to say more about it because I'll just start giving the shiurim again. I enjoyed the Macholos Asuros and Yisurei Hana. Anyways, in the context of Yevamos, it's a little bit different because clearly the theme is Yibum v'Chalitza, which is very complex and very diffused, as I mentioned. So the things that sometimes come up on the daf are really other things. In particular, in Maror Makomos, I mentioned that one should begin as soon as possible to get the Shaka V'Tarya from Beis to Gimel Amud Beis. After Gimel Amud Beis, you have like a 3.5 dapim excursion, mostly on the general din of ase dochalos ase, as it's applied to, you know, all sorts of other things, tzitzes and kibud av ve'eim and onesh, meeting out of onesh and b'shabbos, and all sorts of other interesting things, which have little per se to do with Yevamos. Now, it's not in my nature to skip for some reason. It's a chisaron probably, but I just, you know, the level of guilt and, you know, it's too much for me. You know, I just can't overcome it. If it's there, we should speak about it. But since these are mostly different topics, and there's so much to do on the Yibam and Chalitza topic, so we're going to move through that. We're going to do it, but we're going to move through that much more quickly. We will speak about the general theme of Ase Dochalos Ase. Again, not in an exhaustive manner, because that would take that would be too much of a distraction. But it's important to do it because it's this is one of the main, this and Nazir are the main sugyas about Ase Dochalos Ase. So we will speak about that. But it's also very important to see how the general theme of Ase Dochalos Ase fits in, particularly with the Yibum application, both to Eish Hasach, which we'll speak more about in a minute. Obviously, that's very critical whether Eish Hasach really is Ase Dochalos Ase, or it's an exception to that rule. That's one of the critical themes of Yevamos. But also, other arayos. What about Kalosso, and what about all sorts of other circumstances of Iser, whether you apply Ase Dochalos Ase to Yibam. So Ase Dochalos Ase will get a little more treatment, A, because it's one of its locus classicus is here, and B, because it overlaps into important themes of Yibam. But mostly that stretch of Dalet Amud Aleph, let's say, through like Ches, we are going to do much more quickly than we normally do things. With the goal being to get back to the Yibam and the Chalitza issues, which will be the primary focus. It's a good idea, because this is such a spread out and interconnected limud, if in your other sedarim, again, you know, there's only so much you can do if you're learning bi'iyun in a morning seder. So it would be a good idea other parts of the day to learn other parts of Yevamos, that would definitely help, you know, perspective and enhance your learning, because it is all interconnected. There, I mean, are two schools of thought when you learn Yevamos and other Sedarim. One is to learn the parts that have nothing to do with the Yibum Chalitza, or at least with the interconnected Yibum issues, and that is to start from either Ha'isha Rabbah, the end, which is, you know, Misa Sabal and Aguna issues. That's an independent limud, or, you know, to, you know, zero in on Cholates and some of the sugyas of Geirus. That's definitely, you know, a way to go. The other possibility, let's say, is to try to augment your morning learning by picking the prakim, you know, that give you the added perspective on the Yibum issues. So that's something to consider for the rest of the day as well. Okay, in terms of the preliminary introductory topics, so again, I would like to get to the daf as quickly as possible, but like many masechtas, Yevamos doesn't really, seems like it doesn't begin in the beginning. One of the suggestions that I'm going to make in the Hagdama is that it's not really such a bad beginning. The first mission in Yevamos, I should just get it in on the record. What does the first mission in Yevamos speak about? Alex, right? Go ahead. What does the first mission in Yevamos speak about? In a nutshell.
15. The 15 women who you can't do even with.
Okay, that's technically correct. So basically, but if you had to zero in and, you know, say it in a more meaningful way,
that Yibum isn't a chesaret.
Forget about the 15. The important thing is
Yibum is not a chesaret, correct?
Okay. Basically, the Mishnah starts with the exception to Yibum, not with the rule. The cases where you don't apply Yibum. Now, whether that's because of kares or other things remains to be seen. Right? It happens that these are cases of kares, that there are rayos. All that is true. Whether it's a technical halacha that the ase is just not docha, los aseshesh, but kares, we'll discuss whether that's true or not. But the point is that the Mishnah, instead of beginning where you would think that it would begin, which is to talk about Yibum and the principle of Yibum, mitzvah of Yibum, the case of Yibum, really speaks about the cases where it speaks about two things, really, or maybe three things, depending on what position you take. Right? The Mishnah speaks about, number one, the cases where there's no Yibum, right? Maybe the cases of Erva. Number two, what else does the Mishnah speak about? I would have you read it, but it'll just take the whole time that we have, and we don't know. The next year, by the way, I should also mention schedule-wise, because this is Labor Day weekend and other things, so the next year will be Tuesday. So we're going to try to do whatever we can today, but we'll pick up with, next week will be Tuesday, Thursday, then we'll be on a regular Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, but Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday for the Shiurim schedule. So that's the... So number one, there's no Yibum Be'erva. It's strange when a Masechta begins with the exception rather than the rule. We should also note, just get it on the record, that I think I had it on the Mar Makomos too, right? That the first Tosus, Ari, the first Tosus in Yevamos makes note.
Oh, there's, what's it called? I didn't really see it so well. So.
Right, just, if you don't mind, just read the first beginning of the Mishnah.
Mishnah starts, Chamesh Esrei, Nashim, Potros, Tzarosayim, Tzaros, Tzarosayim, Min Achalitim, Yerim, Ad Sof HaOlam.
Yeah, the Elohein will leave for now, okay. Although we'll discuss it.
I didn't see the word arrives.
Yeah, exactly. So number one, the Mishnah starts off with the exception rather than the rule. That can be, again, you know, it's hard to know, this is something that we're going to discuss, you know, why the, you know, Rebbe or the, you know, where the team that worked with him on being Mesader or Samishna, it's always hard to figure out, you know, how significant, you know, the order is and the choice of beginning is. We'll see that part of the Mar Makomos, number three, I think, talking about the location of Yevamos in Masechet in the Seder Nashim, is a similar kind of a question. Right? Is there significance to the structure of the Mishnayos, and within a Masechta, is there significance to the order of the Prakim and the Mishnayos, etc.? There are some, you know, Rishonim and Mefarshim generally who find very technical reasons to explain the sequence. You know, I'm not going to shock you if I reveal that my own preference you know, is to find, you know, something that is a little more, that reflects a little more, you know, symptomatically about the character or the nature of a particular institution, to assume that, you know, the order, at least, you know, the basic decision about the order, you know, reflects something more fundamental. So we'll talk about Yevamos's role in Nashim, and also one of the things I want to speak about is why the Mishnah begins with the exception rather than the rule. The Mishnah really tells us three things, right? One is the hardcore erva, other than Eish HaSach, is not subject to Yibum. We need to understand that halacha. If we understood it well, we might better appreciate that there might be a conceptual reason why we begin with this. Obviously, that's what I'm going to suggest, but certainly some of the Mefarshim made other suggestions. And so number one, Yibum is an exception. Yibum doesn't apply to Erva, other than Eish HaSach. Number two, that the scope of that din, the din that Erva is disqualified from Yibum, right, applies not only to the woman who is subject to Erva, but, Ari? Also the Tzara. Also her colleague, we'll call it, or her rival. I prefer to say colleague because I'm a peace, you know, conciliatory, you know, kind of a person. But really it means her rival. Although maybe the fact that it's her rival is, you know, a conciliatory kind of thing too. We'll talk about that also. But the point is that not only the erva, but her fellowship of the wives, her, you know, competing rival, companion, you know, whatever it will be, is excluded as well. Surely that's, you know, that's interesting. That erva is mufka, and that there's no ase dochalos ase, and that eish HaSach, you know, emerges as being somehow different, is one issue. That there's no chalitza. We'll talk about all this. I'm just mentioning it preliminarily. That not only is there no yibum, but there's also no chalitza is interesting. We'll have to see how significant that is. That it extends also to the tzara sa'erva is, you know, of course, a huge madrega, a huge additional step. Something with Beis Shammai probably dispute, but very important to understand that nature of that halacha. And then, of course, the third halacha, whether it's a third or a second, right, or whether they're all just one, which is tzoroseyem ad sof kol ha'olam, which means not only the the connected, you know, other wives, but even the people that becomes a status in its own right. Maybe that's not conceptually a proper way to say it. We'll discuss it. A tzoros, the tzara of a tzara, is also excluded, you know, from Yibum. So the fact that the Mishnah begins, you know, with this three levels, the erva, right, and there's also no chalitza, the tzara, which is a leap, and tzara's tzara ad sof kol olam, which is a much bigger leap, these halachos need to be understood, and we would also try to understand why we begin with this. Tosus's question, why it is, and other Rishonim as well, Tosus also asks the question, other Rishonim, why do we say Chamesh Asrei Nashim? Why don't we say Arayos, like the next Mishnah? Again, Tosis gives an answer to the question. The question itself is an interesting question. It piques our curiosity. Namely, are these just a list of situations where there happens not to be Yibum, or is the status of Erva important here, the fact that it's Erva? And this is a din in Erva. A din in Erva, or the conjunction between Erva and Yibum, which is unacceptable, which is why, like, you should really call them Erva, not just because it's more precise, but because maybe the Mechayev here is Erva. Something to look out for, and then when the Rishonim ask questions, why don't you have other cases in the Mishnah, like Tosus does, Nida, and again, we'll talk about all this, I'm just trying to explain preliminary, Nida, or if there's a Tanai of some sort, Tosus and Daf Yud, Tosus talks about Nida and Daf Beis and Aleph, or Asota cases, a Tosan base on the base, right? Something to think about, this issue of Erva. So we begin with the question of Yevamos and Nashim, and the question of why we begin with Erva. That's where the Mishnah starts. But as much as I'm going to try to explain how that really is, you know, a magnificent choice, and fits in with our understanding of the nature of Yibum, right? On the surface, it's a hard place to begin without any background. Or maybe another way to say this would be, you know, for me to be able to explain, or at least to throw out a possible explanation why this is actually a very good place to start, would require that we have a better understanding of what Yibum is all about, which is why we have Hakdama topics, preliminary topics. So our preliminary topics are going to be to analyze, number one, the Psukim, which we're going to get to a little bit today. The Masechta is very diffuse, as I mentioned. It's all spread out and complicated. Zeroing in on the Torah Shebitzav is always a good place to start. The formulations in Torah Shebitzav are always a good place to start. In this case in particular, it's much more finite, and we can ask certain questions so that we can identify some of the issues in our mind, which will help us going forward, much better than if we were trying to, you know, cull all the information from the Mishnayos and the Gemara. So either way, it's always a good place to start from Torah Shebitzav. We always do. And in this case, it's particularly a good place to start. So we'll start with the Psukim and some of the Mefarshim on the Psukim and what they imply. But a lot of this, of course, is rooted in the Gemaras and the Rishonim on the Gemara, which we'll get to and fill in. From there, we'll go to the other Parsha, which is Vayishlach, which has the distinction of being pre-Matan Torah. So, it's interesting in its own right, just what was going on in the Parsha of Yehuda and Tamar, but also what are the implications of Yibum either applying or not applying, or applying, you know, differently, partially applying, you know, pre-Matan Torah, when some of the other dinim of Ishus didn't apply, both on a Benoach level and on a pre-Klal Yisrael level. Then we'll discuss, say, the question of the Rishonim's and Mefarshim's suggestion about why Yivamos is the beginning of Sefer Nashim, and whether that's a technicality or isn't connected to some of the themes that we already noticed in Psukim. Then we're going to discuss the scope of the mitzvah itself, based on what we've seen so far, the formulations of the Rishonim and Mefarshim, the relationship between Yibam and Chalitza, the question whether the mitzvah applies only to the Yavam or also to the Yavama. These are all going to be questions that we're going to try to analyze. And connected with that, the question of the relationship between the mitzvah of Yibum and the kinyan of Yibum, both practically, whether you can split these two things, if they're connected, how are they connected? And then, of course, Isur Eishes Ach, the special yichus of the brother, questions of Hutra and Dechuya, that are connected with that as well. And then finally, something about the relationship between Yibum and Chalitza. Now, some of these topics we're going to try to integrate into the parak itself, because I'd like to get to that as soon as we can. So we might just mention them at the outset and identify them and speak about them a little bit, and the more extensive treatment will come, you know, within the parak itself. That's certainly going to be true for Hutra Dechuya, and for the question of Kinyan and Mitzvah. So we'll be working on both levels at the same time. Okay. So now let's actually just discuss a little bit some of the factors and, some of the dimensions of Yibum to look out for before we actually start looking at the material itself. Yivamos has a reputation well-deserved for being a complex and a difficult limud. Number one, because it's very interconnected and spread out, as I mentioned, almost in a way that defies any analogy, any other Gemara, pretty much. Number two, because there are a lot of complicated hekatimtzis that has, you know, derailed people's ability to understand some of the Gemaras. You have to have, like, you know, be able to do the cheshbonos. I see that in the back of these Gemaras, they have charts. I haven't looked at them yet. I'm not very good at charts, but it could be that they'll help you. It's very important to get past that. In other words, sometimes you just have to suspend, like, immediate, precise, understanding of the case to get a general idea. And then, of course, it's always important to understand the case. But the point is, you need to be able to filter out the mental energy that you're putting into figuring out the case, and not lose sight of what's important about the cases, and that is what they highlight about the concepts. In the Hagdama of the Chovos HaVavos, you know, the Bach, even Pekuda, so he you know, explains why Chovos HaVavos, you know, are so important. And it's, you know, Chodesh Elul, so revisiting the importance of Chovos HaLevavos in the context of Tshuva is a good thing to do anyway. So, you know, among other things, you know, he has kind of a barb, which also appears in the Hagdama of the you know, Baal Emunah Rama, you know, the, that Ravid, Baal Sefer, not the Rabbi Avada, not the Ravid, but the Baal Sefer Emunah Rama and Sefer Kabbalah. You know, both of them have this barb about, you know, people spending a lot of time, you know, figuring out, you know, technical cases. And in the case of Chovos HaLevavos, he particularly mentions the Yibum cases. So I always try to explain, he didn't mean to trivialize, you know, the importance of halacha, you know, as opposed to hashkafa, chas v'shalom. That's inconceivable, at least I think it's inconceivable. What he meant was, you know, sometimes, you know, you could just be marbed, you know, technical cases. Oh, I can give you another one. You know, there are five brothers who married, you know, three sisters and two cousins. You know, the first, you know, two sisters' husbands died first, then the second cousins, then the third brothers. What would happen then? The point is that you have to distinguish between... you have to always understand the case, because without understanding the mitzias and the echetimtzis, you can't understand what's going on. But the purpose of the cases are to highlight, you know, the to isolate the factors. And you want to spend less time on the cases and more time, you know, extracting what's important about the cases. So the second reason that Yevamos is very difficult is because the cases are hard. And sometimes people, you know, focus too much on the complexity of the cases, you know, and by the time they figure out what's going on, they're already mentally exhausted, and they're, you know, lost the focus of what should be, which is the concepts and the issues. We're hopefully not going to do that, and you're learning of Yevamos, you should be aware of that. But far more important than the first two, and this is not as well known, the real reason Yevamos is a difficult limud is because the institution of Yibum and Yibum and Chalitza is a complex halachic institution. And that's what I want to speak about today in the Hagdama, and this is really what we're going to be speaking about all year long. It's not the cases only, and it's not the diffusion. It's really inherently the idea of Yibum that is very, very difficult. What I'd like to do then is just, number one, zero in on some of the difficulties so we can be aware and identify them, be acquainted with them in advance, and to raise some questions which we're going to be filling in you know, during the year. Okay, so just, again, these are not exhaustive and certainly not even as questions, but just to raise some of the issues. The first issue, of course, the first complexity in Yibum is the very notion of Zika. Normally, we, you know, adopt the ruling of the Mishnah in Kiddushin da Beis Amid Aleph, which is Isha, you know, is Kona Es Atzma, Isha Niknes Begimel Drachim, and she's Kona Es Atzma, you know, Beget U Bemisa Sabah. So normally, Misa Sabal is the end of a marriage. That's what the Mishnah tells us. Right? Yibum challenges, right, that reality, that conventional wisdom, and that, you know, general truth. In the case of Yibum, right, the marriage and the Kones Atzmo is not ended by Misa Sabal. After Misa Sabal, there's something called Zika. And the question is, how do we understand that? Again, we'll speak more about each of these things. I just want to throw out certain things. Structurally, right, one can take one of two positions. One is to say that the Mishnah is right, even in the case of Yibum, meaning largely a marriage is over when it's when the husband is no longer alive. And, you know, what is Yibum and Zika? It's a mitzvah, it's a chiyuv, it's something more extraneous. And maybe it's something that is narrowly focused. We'll see in a moment, I think one of the biggest themes in the Masechta is to take two broad positions on this question. How do we look at the dinim of Yibum? And I'll be elaborating this again and again. One way is to say that the conventional institutions of Ishus that we're familiar with apply to Yibum as well. Yibum looks like an exception, right? But, and it is an exception, but it's an exception which works, you know, not only within the normal framework, but even employs some of the normal institutions. Right? In the most extreme, what that would mean would be that when the husband dies and he doesn't have children, right, he still died, and that's the end of that ishus. However, right, and we'll discuss the permutations of this, there's a chiyuv, there's something called yibum, and it's the chiyuv of yibum that creates the zika. The marriage would be over, but there's some new artificially or otherwise imposed obligation of yibum, and because of yibum, there's zika. According to this perspective, so basically what we're saying is that yibum has a very focused, yibum has nothing to do, it's not about the complex continued, you know, ishus habal or the intermingling of the, you know, the husband and the brother or the family, all the issues which we'll discuss. No, basically konas atzav abisas habal, but now there's something called zika, which is based on a separate chiyuv yibum, which generates seemingly things that defy the norms, but conceptually they really don't. In which case, we would expect that even moving forward, right, we would be dealing mostly with the conventional categories, as we'll explain. That's one perspective. The other perspective, the opposite perspective, is to say that Yibum really is an exception which defies, you know, these rules. Although, maybe in the bigger picture, right, if we really understand everything well, maybe it really integrates and fills out the picture of Ishus. That's an exception which isn't artificial and narrow, but is part of the larger mosaic, let's say, of Ishus. I'm not revealing, you know, hopefully any secrets by suggesting that Our third little topic, like why does Yivamos the beginning of Seder Nashim? So again, Rishonim give different reasons. We'll discuss them. Rambam is Akdama to Rishon Mishnayos. He speaks about the question of the role of Kfiya, right? Tosis Yishanim, right here in Dab Beis Amud Aleph, and Tosis Moed Katan, you know, tried either to connect it to Moed Katan and Misa and Peronus, right, which doesn't tell you much about Yibum, or suggestion of Tosis Yishanim that it's connected to the story of Yehuda v'Tamar, which is very important to us. There are different answers that are given. We'll go through each one. My preference would be that Yivamos, you know, is the beginning of Seder Nashim because it sets a tone in Seder Nashim. It highlights certain things about Ishus and family, right, which even though it's exceptional, the case is exceptional, and the case seems to contradict some of the standalone institutions of Ishus, but when taken, you know, as a whole, it really highlights them and accentuates them as well. And we'll explain. And that's why, I'll explain what I mean. Maybe that's why Yivamos really sets the tone for Seder Nashim. But for that to be true, so then you can't look at Yibum as defying or as an exception or as just a narrow, you know, there's a certain goal, and that goal is overriding, like it's doche, you know, the regular dinim, like we said before. But rather, you have to see Yibum as part of Ishus. and as being exceptional, but an exception, you know, which highlights certain dimensions, maybe in a way that can't be highlighted any other way. That's the ambition. That's what I'm going to try to make a case for. So from that point of view, what we might say is that Yibum represents a case where Misa Sabal, that mission and Kiddushin, is not true. In other words, when you have Misa Sabal, when there are no children, right, Kahai Gavna, the Ishus isn't completely over. Now what that means, right, in what sense isn't it over? I mean, there's still no living, breathing husband, right? And there are certainly aspects, you know, the regular din of Eishes Ish doesn't apply. Shomer Siavam is not an Eishes Ish, right? She is a quasi-Eishes Ish, maybe, or not. That's one of the things we have to figure out. So the details I'm not talking about. I'm talking about a general approach. This particularly might help if you think that Misa Sabal, generally, and this is a topic in its own right, maybe we'll touch on some of the details of it, but Misa Sabal is a matir. But there are two ways to understand when the Mishnah and Kiddushin says that Kona Atzma b'Misa Sabal. Right? One is that it's just quite natural. There's no husband, there's no Ishus. You know, he's, you know, even if you don't accept, like, you know, the Telzer Hakira about, you know, Ishus being renewed every minute. What's the joke that they tell about that? Something about Shem Brachos? Or? I don't know. What's what?
I should get mazel tov every second.
See, I was trying to halachasize it, say it should be constant Sheva Brachos. Okay. At least like, you know, not less than Matzer Kushasa. But the point is, even if you don't think that the Kiddushin is renewed, I mean, it should be Kachadashim, one shouldn't, right? One shouldn't take one's marriage for granted, right? But, you know, even if you don't accept that view, the idea that if there's no husband, there's no marriage is certainly more than reasonable. However, there is some evidence that Ishus doesn't die so easily. Ishus is a very durable kind of a thing, like all good serious things, and it needs a matir, just like a get is not just the termination or establishes that the end of the marriage, but is a matir. So too, there's some evidence that Misa Sabal is a matir. Right? The famous discussion of the Truma Sadeshin and others about, Eishes Eliyahu, Eliyahu, ascended, to the next world, but, didn't necessarily die in the normal way. So this whole question, he wasn't around, there was no continued Mazel Tov or Sheva Brachos or anything like that, but there was no formal Misa either. This is a big question. The question of Getlach or Misa, Rashi and Tosus, and the famous discussion of Xos, right? On some level, we're saying Getlach or Misa, is it because there's no marriage or because there's no Getlach or Misa? The Rishonim would seem to say that there, there just is no Kinyan or no Getlach or Misa, but somehow there's a relevant marriage to talk about, seem to be saying that, Misa Sabal isn't necessarily the end of the marriage. You need a matir of some sort. The end of the Masechta Yevamos deals with Eid Echad b'Misa Sabal. Once wrote a piece trying to argue that how you look at Eid Echad b'Misa Sabal may very well be dependent on this issue, whether Bezin is kind of matir in the case of Eid Echad b'Misa Sabal, because this idea that Misa Sabal isn't just the termination or the end of the marriage, but it's a matir of some sort. Why am I telling you this now, aside from the fact that it's generally an interesting question? If we see Misa Sabal as a matir, not just as establishing that the marriage, there's no marriage, because there's no Baal, so then the idea that in the context of there not being any children by the producing this marriage, right, that Kai Gavna, there's still husband isn't there, But maybe Misa as a matir doesn't work in that case. In which case, there is some continuation on some level, some aspect. Not fully. This is one of the things that we have to figure out. If there is a continuation of the Ishus of the Mace, right, with respect to what yes and what not. He's not there. And, that's clear. There's no matir, maybe, or the matir is incomplete. What about that? So that's one question. But as I say, it isn't just a question of how you look at Yibum, it's a question, a bigger question, which I think is a leitmotif of a lot of these questions, and that is, do we look at Yibum as something unique and different within Ishus, and which is, you know, reflective of Ishus, which complicates the picture of Ishus, etc.? Or no, it's really the conventional institutions of Ishus, and the Chi of Yibum is something which generates its own issues, but it's a very narrow and a very limited focus, and it certainly doesn't redraw the contours of Ishus itself. That's one question. The Machlokas in the Gemara about, you know, Yesh Zika or Ein Zika, all throughout the Masechta, not so much in the beginning of the Masechta, but certainly starting from the third parak. You have to understand the Mandamar says Yesh Zika, and the Mandamar who says Ein Zika. Big Machlokas Rishonim to understand each. What is the level of Tlius? Again, are we dealing with Shomeres Yavam, who is really, you know, a kind of a Neshesish, you know, a moderate Neshesish, or some separate independent institutions, a Chiyuv Yibum that creates the Zika, or the Zika is really a leftover of the initial Ishus. Formulations in different Gemaras and Rishonim, whether this is talking about a remnant of the Nase, and what we mean by that, and different aspects of that, or whether it's an automatic kesher to the brother or to the group of brother, the brotherhood, one might say, of you know, the brothers collectively, or the mishpacha, or whether, as the Gemara uses the phrase, and the Rambam particularly likes it, hiknelo, you know, min hashamayim, somehow there's a din Torah that imposes a kind of ishus. What exactly is that, both according to the Mandamar Yesh Zika and according to the Mandamar Ein Zika? What do we mean by all of this? What do we mean when we talk about a continuing kesher to the Nes? Right. Do we mean it literally? Do we mean that the kedushin of the Nes? Sfarno has a line, which we'll, again, if we don't get to it today, we'll go all the details of this once we start the psukim. But the Sfarno, both in Vayeshev and in Kitetze, has a terrific line where he says that the Hakamas Shem Al Shem Ames is connected to the fact that there's no need for a new Eris. Right? Still, the Eris of the Kiddushin is the Kiddushin of the Med. The Nesuin, let's say, or the Ishus, belongs to the brother. But the Kiddushin is a leftover or an overlap, you know, from the Mace. And in that sense, right, there's a connection. What is the connection to the Mace? In Akama Zera, right, the naming and, you know, some of the you know, Kabbalah formulations. We're not studying Kabbalah here, but even when Chalitza is a very highly charged issue, some of the Rishonim use such phrases. Rabbeinu Bechai, I didn't tell you to look at Rabbeinu Bechai, but if you get a chance, since we're running a little late anyway, by Tuesday, to look at Rabbeinu Bechai in both the Parshas, but especially in Parshas Kiseitse, he has some very interesting things to say. So this connection between the continuing connection of the Mace, what exactly is it? Sefer Achinuch has a very important formulation of this that is different than the Sfarno. Others will say that the connection is really very tentative, especially if you take the view that the Ishus is really over, and there's some other chiyuv at stake here. Maybe it's just memory, maybe it's mostly the financial wishes or the financial slash existential desires or interests of the Mace, which we're respecting. In other words, there's a range of possibilities how connected the Mace is, you know, to the Isha La'acharmosa. And that needs to be understood. What is the connection to the brother? The questions of Zika, according to my number, Yeshu Nein Zika, both also with respect to her status as opposed to his status, if there are multiple achim, multiple nashim, all these are very complicated issues that require analysis. Just structurally, as I say, the question of you know, yivamo yavo aleha ulekacha lo gliisha, right? The question of how you understand that, right? Aisha niknes bekesef b'shtar b'bia. Why is a yivama only niknes b'bia? Is it the same bia or not? Right, and if so, why have we eliminated Kesef and Shtar? According to the view of Beis Shammai, it could be that Kesef and Shtar Maimar works. Why wouldn't Maimar work, Lahalacha, according to Beis Hillel? What are we dealing with here? There already is a Kedushin, and this is something else. What is the relationship, in other words? How do we understand Yibum vis-a-vis, right, the normal institutions, Erusin and Nisuin? Is it one, the other? Is it a third category? Right? Is it neither Erusin nor Nisuin, just something called Yibum? Right? These are things to look out for. So both the complex, multiple questions about Zika, both in terms of the mace, and in terms of the Isha, and in terms of the brother, that's one whole complicating factor where you can see there's going to be a range of positions. That's one issue. And this second question, what is the relationship to other institutions in Ishus, Erusin and Nisuin, is going to be another question to consider. A third question to consider is going to be the question of what happened to the Iser Eshes Ach. This is the third complexity. Right? Eshes Ach is one of the Arayos. Right? Kedushin is not Tofes. It's Chayve Krisus. Right, it's on a long list of arayos in the Torah and elsewhere. How did that all of a sudden change in the context of Yibum? So once again, the question is, how do we look at this problem? And as I say, I think generally, again, the difficulty in Yibamos is, I think that there are, in the bigger picture, that there are two issues that aren't necessarily completely parallel. One is the question that I'm raising, whether Yibum is its own category and one which complicates but also makes more precise and our appreciation of the whole constellation and configuration of Yishus, right? Or whether it's a narrower Chiyuv which, you know, seems to defy everything but mostly is just a result of a particular mitzvah or Chiyuv. That's one issue. And then the second group of questions is to figure out precisely, right, what is the relationship to the mace? What is the mechayev? Is it the zera? Is it the mace? Is it the isha? Right? Now these questions are two different questions and there's a relationship between them, but they're two different questions. So getting to this third point and the complexity, the Iser Eshes Ach, again, one could take two broad approaches. One is to say this, an Iser Eshes Ach, it's like any other erva and kolat arakula. There's no difference between Eshes Ach and kalaso, or emo, or Eshes Aviv, or, you know, something else. The only thing is that there's a chi of Yibum for whatever reason, whatever that mechayev is. And that chi of Yibum, right, requires setting aside, overrides Eshes Ach. And that's what happens here, right? That's what we normally call dechuya, and that's the idea behind it. The only question is, why, if there's such an urgency to do Yibum that you can override Eshes Ach, you know, why isn't the same urgency apply to the other arayos that are mentioned in the Mishnah? And that's what the Gemara asks, right? The Gemara, and that's why we have this excursus of ase do chalos ase for four dapim, right? Because Gemara in the bottom of Gimel Bay says, right, you know, what is the status of ase do chalos ase in an alav sheyeshbo kares? And there's a leitmotif in that Gemara, and then later on the Gemara is naf chaf and chaf omud base, and throughout, namely, if Yisra Eshes Ach is nothing special, it's just nidcha b'pnei yibum, so why not apply the same thing to other arayos? But I think another approach, and we'll document this, is to say that, again, especially if you take our, you know, our other approach in the more general sense, which is Yibum isn't just about a chiyuv which, you know, causes, overrides or causes adjustments to the normal institutions of Ishus. Rather, right, Yibum is a din b'fnei atzmo, and it's part of Ishus, and it's a more and mishakef on certain aspects of Ishus too. So then, Right, instead of seeing Eishes Ach as something which is nidche, and then asking why isn't everything else like it, we're going to go the other way. We're going to say that the Iser Eishes Ach Meolam was never said in the context of Ibum. It's only said when there's a living brother and an Ishus, you know, which ended properly. Ki Yeshvu, you know, Achim Yachad, when you have the circumstances of Yibum, there is no Eshesach, in which case we should be open to wondering whether Eshesach is a different kind of Erva. Certainly in this context, it's a different kind of Erva. And what does that reflect? Now this, of course, brings us to the question of why Dafka brothers from the father, what is the connection to Yerusha, right? Why the formulation of Bechor, things which we'll highlight when we read the Psukim and throughout. Again, is this the Torah's way of just limiting or defining when Yibum applies? Or is there a pattern here in the Mechayev of Yibum, number one, what Yibum is really about, and especially in the role, this complex picture of the role that Yibum plays in Ishus, which makes it particularly, you know, the brother, which, you know, does or doesn't give Yichus to the older brother, which is connected to Nachla and to the father, and so on and so forth. So these are the two approaches that we're going to be pursuing, but again, more particularly also, does it matter if it's the Mechayev is the status of the Isha, or the Zera of the Mace, and so on and so forth. The status of Bia Rishona as opposed to Bia Shnia is part of this topic as well. The Pre-Matan Torah and the story of Boaz and Rus, can there be Yibum or Me'ein Yibum without a brother? Right? Is that totally different? All of this is part of that topic. But that's a very important complication. Just like Misa not ending and there being some sort of a continued connection to the mace, just like that being a complicated idea that needs to be understood, so too the setting aside of one of the arayos, Iser Eshesach, and its implications is the second thing that needs to be understood. The third thing, of course, is the connection to the Vlad. What role does Lahakim Shem Achiv Hakamazera, what does that play? Is that the Mechayiv? There are two questions here. Number one, just what does it mean, you know, that that a child which is fathered by a brother is somehow connected, right, to the deceased, you know, husband? Just what do we mean by that? Just technically, what is the kasher? Clearly, his DNA is made up of his mother and his now father, who is, you know, which is the brother of the mace. So what do we mean? Is that a mystical concept? Is that, like the Sfarnu says, based on the fact that this Ishus takes place in a context of the Erusin of the mace? Is it a memory thing? Is it a Yerusha thing? What exactly is that connection, and what role does it play? Sefer Chinuch, again, has very important formulations about this. Rebbeinu Bechaye, the Sfarnu, all of them speak in language which is very suggestive. Is the Mechayev really the child or not? Considering that Bia Rishona is the only Chiyuv, right? Is there a requirement of actual potential of Hakamas Shem and Zera? Right? Some Rishonim with the opinion that you just need somebody who's a Gavra, who is or was Roy Lahakamas Zera. But you might even have, according to this big Machlokes Rishonim, you might even have Yibum in cases where, in fact, there is no possibility of producing offspring. That obviously is a huge Machlokes Rishonim. It's hard to say that the Mechayev is Hakamas Zera, never mind what we mean by that, to what extent there really is, you know, this child is Nigrar Achar Hanes, whatever we mean by that. It's hard to say that's the Mechayev according to the Rishonim, who think that this is merely potential. Even according to the Rishonim, who think that you have to have real potential, the fact that Bia Rishona is the only mitzvah, that's a Sugya Daf Chaf, raises the question, Right? How seriously do we take this as a mechayev? And if it's not the mechayev, then how do we understand hakama zera and even the potential or the old potential of the somebody who at one point was wrong? What kind of factor is that if it's not this factor? How is this connected to period of Arivia? Something else which we'll be discussing very soon. So that's the third, or the fourth rather, complexity. The fifth is, not fifth, maybe it's what we were saying before, the relationship between, you know, Kiddushin and Nisuin, and whether Yibum is an independent halakha. It's interesting to note, we'll start with this in just a minute, that in Parshas Ki Teitzeh, when we have the discussion of Yibum, it's disconnected from the Parsha of Kiddushin and Gerushin. Okay. I don't know why it is where it is. I can't figure that out. I mean, Losachsam Shor B'disho, the Gemara has a limud, you know, which connects the smichos right in the beginning of the Masechta. But conceptually, why it's connected to the things that it's connected before and after, I don't know. But I'm not even going to hazard a guess on that one. But I do think it's significant minimally, and that I think might be important, that it's not integrated into the parsha of Kiddushin and Gerushin. Right? So the question is why? Is this the Torah's way of saying this isn't a fast-track Kiddushin, or a Kiddushin which overrides Eish HaSach, and it isn't, Chalitza isn't just a Gerushin, it's Yibum and Chalitza. It's something different, as we'll discuss. So these are issues that we need to discuss extensively. The requirements need to be evaluated in parallel. There's a Bal Korchach in Yibum. There's no Kesef Ishtar, according to Beis Hillel, in Yibum. Right? To what extent does that determine that we're not talking about normal Kiddushin and Erusin? Or maybe there's an explanation for why these things are different, but it still is connected. So how connected is it to the other institutions? Both Kiddushin, Nisuin is another possibility. If you look in the formulation of Rishonim, we'll sum all this up when we get to it. But some Rishonim speak about Yibum in terms of Likuchin, right, based on the Pasuk. Yavo Aleha, right? Ulekacha lo Leisha. The Chinuch has that formulation. Nafka the Rambam and Sefer HaMitzvos, Reish Tezayin, speaks about no Sei Isha. In Hilchos Yibum Vechalitza, and the Smak has this as well. They speak about liyavein as if it's an independent verb. So again, it's hard to make too much about any particular. All these are legitimate melitzos when the issues are there anyway, right? Is this erusin? Is it nisuin? Is it something separate called yibum? So then, when you find the diversity in the rishonim, right, it becomes more significant. Either way, these are things to look out for. The same thing is true with Chalitza. Chalitza is a kind of a get, just it's a moderate get because it's a moderate HSH, Shemeres Yavam. Or no, Chalitza is very different than get. The Rashash and the Mordot of Yehuda have a famous discussion of this in the first Mishnah in Sanhedrin. Whether Chalitza is Kain get, Midrabanan. We treat a chalutza like a grusha with regard to psule arayos. Right? How significant is this? The very fact that there's yibum and chalitza is a further complication. It's not only how does yibum fit with erusin and nisuin? How does chalitza fit with gerushin? Where do we find in the Torah an institution, right, where you seem to have an option, right, to do two opposite things? Right, almost unheard. Question is, what is the relationship between them? So on the one hand, Yibum and Chalitza look like opposites. Right, Yibum is the Knisa, obviously, and Chalitza is the Get. On the other hand, they say they're one Parsha, and they're both addressing the status of Zika. Do we look at them as two sides of the same coin? That would be one perspective on the Mechayev. Or do we really look at them as opposites? The relationship between Yibum and Chalitza is something which needs to be understood. Number one, and on several levels again. Number one, is a priority one over the other? The Kedima issue, Abishol, the Chachamim, like what is preferred and why? Number two, Kol She'ena Ola Liyibum, Eina Ola L'Chalitza, which we'll discuss in the beginning, Dapim of the Perek. What do we mean by that? I mentioned already the example of Arayos. There's no Chalitza in Arayos either. We understand maybe why there's no Yibum, right? Alex said it's because it's Asid Ochalos Aseshiesh Bakaris. Maybe or maybe not, right? Might depend on whether it is or isn't. But the point is that that should help to explain why there's no Yibum, right? Why is there no Chalitza? So this principle, Kol She'eino Ola Yibum, Eino Ola Chalitza, how do we understand it? And how does it work? What is the scope? What are the exceptions? What is it based on? Etc. So that's the second issue. First issue being the Kedima. The third issue is to compare the requirements of Yibum and Chalitza. Right? Das, Edikium, things of that sort. Now again, some of the discrepancies, if they exist, are going to be attributed to the direction, right? You know, building an ishus and destroying an ishus. That might explain some of the discrepancies. You know, just like v'yatza v'haisa, you know, in Gittin v'kedushin. And yet, there are some differences. Here too, is that what's happening with Yibum and Chalitza? It's like v'yatza v'haisa? Or not? This has particularly to do with the nature of Zika and the character of Yibum, as we've been saying. So that's a third thing that needs to be analyzed. Just symbolically, if nothing else, the issue comes up in the context of minyan mitzvahs. For as we know, and we'll discuss it more fully, most Rishonim count Yibum v'chalitza independently. The Rambam, the Chinuch, the Smag, the Smak, and so on. The Sajagon counted Yibum v'chalitza as one. And the Rivash has an interesting and a famous tshuva, where he's mistapek about this issue. Well, so is it like making kiddush? We'll discuss it, the details. They say we go one by one. So, you know, you can make kiddush on yayin, you can make kiddush on pas. Wow, that's Yibum and chalitza. Or not. He's not sure about it. So obviously this is a very important question. So at least on four levels, we have to examine the relationship between Yibum and chalitza and the fact that the Torah gives us an option which itself is a very unusual phenomenon. Of course, the whole tekes and the details of chalitza, which are so fascinating, we're not going to speak about that so much now in the beginning. Most of we're going to zero in on Yibum. But what it reflects about Zika and the chi of Yibum, to the extent, and at some point I'd like to do chalitza more extensively. Okay. So these are things to look at. This is the reason that Yibamos is a difficult and a complex limud. I say not only because of the hechatimsis or the diffusion, but mostly because the things I've just described are seemingly unique features compared with the other ishus institutions that we know and most other halakha categories that we know. We're dealing with a lot of seemingly exceptions or contradictions to normal rules, and we're dealing with a certain balance and tension that is built into Yibum. The mace, the brother, right, the Yibum, the Chalitza, the role of Hakamazera, the role of the Isha, right, the question of the Kiyum Arayos, the Kiyum of Yibum versus the Isar of Erva, etc. So that's what makes this into a very complicated question. So let's begin with the Psukim themselves. I'm mostly going to show you how I think suggestive they are of some of these questions. But I'd say keep in mind the bigger question, which to me goes through everything, and that is whether you look at the problems of Yibum in a more narrow way, Chiyuv HaKamazera, Chiyuv to remove the Zika of the Isha, whatever it is, but basically we're trying as much as possible to preserve the other conventional patterns, whether it be of Arayos on one side or of Ishus on the other, or whether or not Yibum is a din b'fnei atzmo, a separate chalos, and something, there's kedushin, there's nesuin, right, there's gerushin, and there's Yibum v'chalitza. And to some extent, the Yibum v'chalitza is every bit part of that configuration, the exceptions again that highlight certain rules. These are the things I think that we want to look at. If you look at the psukim in the parsha, it already becomes very apparent that we're dealing with a very unusual institution. Let's just, for the 10 minutes or so that we have, let's just begin, just read the psukim, and then we'll try to move more quickly through the rest of the marmakomos I gave you on Tuesday. This is just try to familiarize you with some of the issues. Okay, Donnie, you want to do the honors? To read the psukim, just... Yeah. Okay, so firstly, just to point out, as I said before, that the placement of this parsha, right? We have Ki Yikach Ish Yishuv V'Ala, we have B'Yatzav Haisa, we have Get, right? We have them, and completely disentangled from all of that, we have Yibum. Now, I'm not sure what that tells us, right? It can tell us one of two things, one of two opposite things that we've been discussing. One is that Yibum is not part of the story of Ishus, right? It undermines certain of the conventions of Ishus, but because of the narrow chiv. There's a chiv of whatever it is, hakamazera, binyan, hames, and as a result, you get things that look like a different configuration of Ishus, but it's better to put it in a parsha that is separated from the parsha of Kiddushin and Gerushin, lest you think that, it's an exception that proves the rule, or that it's part of it. That's one possibility. You could also say exactly the opposite, right? You could say that if we had connected Yibum and Chalitza to Kiddushin and Gerushin, so we'd be seeing Yibum as Erusin, or Nisuin at least, and we'd be seeing Chalitza as Gittin. It's important to put it very far away to establish that this is a different level of Ishus, again, in the Sefer HaMitzvah sense, as I mentioned before. It's interesting to note, again, the Chinuch has the language of Lekicha, right? Kinyan. There are other, we'll discuss, we'll get a list for all these things, other equations to Erusin. The Rambam in Sefer HaMitzvos uses the language of Nosei, as if it's connected to Nisuin. But the Rambam in Yad HaChazaka and the Smak and others say, simply Yabim, right? Yibum is its own Chalos, right? Now, what is that? It's the Erusin of the Mace and the Nisuin of the Chai, or it's Ishus, it's Yibum, it's sui generis, just unique in its own way. Hard to know. But that's about the placement. The next point is that the first pasuk itself is just packed full of not only information and themes, but also questions. The beginning, Ki Yeshvu Achim Yachtav, is very remarkable. Gerashi Alatar, Dani tells us that it refers to several Gemaras and also Sifrei. Yeah, go ahead.
Shaisa Lemishiva Achas Beholam. Apparently, just other Shaya Beholamas.
Yeah.
Yachdahim Yachadim Nahala, Hala Achim Nahim. Bene Mo, Ain Elo, Bene Obas, or Bene Aben.
Okay, good. The Bene Lo party. But the number one, so the Kieshush Achim Yachdah was a very remarkable introduction to Parshas Yibum. What do you mean, Kieshvu Achim Yachtav? Meaning they have to all live in the same neighborhood. That's a precondition for, the Ibn Ezra says. The Ibn Ezra is a different issue, but the Ibn Ezra is arguing with the Karaim about the question of Yibum. It's very important to our issue too, whether Yibum is always limited to brothers or there's some quasi concept of Yibum that applies, beyond brothers. So one of his rayas is, he says, why do we start with Kieshvu Achim Yachtav? What does it mean? They live in the same town, they live in the same house, they live in the same, what's that all about? That's his cheshba. What he's trying to say is, you need Achim. He says the pshat is like Chazal say, that the Ach Shelo Hayav Be'olamo is mufka from Yibum. But if that's true, then is Achshaloya Bolomo, I think is what Ibn Ezra means. It's hard to know. It's a little bit obscure. But I think what he's saying is, if you believe that anybody other than an Ach, you know, still has some din of Yibum, so why do we care about Haya Bolomo or Lohaya Bolomo? Is he worse than the father or a cousin? You know, etc. Boaz and so on. But either way, we'll get back to the Ibn Ezra, but what it highlights is that this is a very strange usage. So Chazal say that this is what it means. It means to exclude. Now the exclusion of Ach Shelo Yabo Lomo, right, is itself an interesting halacha. I mean, he is a brother. He has the same DNA, same father, same mother. If the thing about Hakamas Zera La'achid is because same wife, you know, and the closest DNA, which I think is a very, certainly maybe part of it, I don't know if it's a whole story, but, you know, why Dafka the brother, right? He has, if you want to get a close DNA genetic match, so you have the same mother, and the closest to the mace in DNA is somebody who has the same parents, would be both, if you know both, but at least, you know, a brother. That's going to be the best match you can get. So what difference make whether Haya Ba'olamo, Lo Haya Ba'olamo, the whole din of Ach Shelo Haya Ba'olamo, which we'll speak about it extensively, Machlokes from Shimon, the Chachamim, and other things about the scope of this din, it's Stam Gzeiros HaKasuv, or does it shed light on Yibum? Either way, that halacha in itself is very interesting. And Yachtov, Ham Yuchad B'Nachla, Prat La'achid B'Nahim, right? Also question, why it's Gzeiros HaKasuv, or there's something different about Achva Minaav and Achva Minaim. How to compare it to other things? We'll talk about it, I say. Question of Mishpacha and Nachla. Nachla directly or Nachla is some sort of indicator? What do we mean by this? But even aside from that, there was no other way for the Torah to highlight Achiv Shaloya Balamo or Ach Minaav. Other than the sentence Ki Yeshvu Achim Yachtav, it sounds a little bit like a Tamiya Mitzvah. Again, the Ibn Ezra picked up on it in one respect, in the negative. Rabbeinu Bechaye Alatar picks up on it in a more positive way. I'll explain Tuesday what I mean. To me, the tone setting of Ki Yeshvu Achim Yachtav theoretically may be very critical. Rabbeinu Bechaye says part of it. He doesn't say it fully. I'm just throwing it out now, and I'll try to develop it. Is it possible that the Torah already is establishing that Yibum should not be looked at narrowly? Right? Only this, oh, you have to have a certain urgency, a certain imperative. You know, you have to do this, but rather comes against the context of the broader idea of mishpacha. Therefore, ki yeshvu achim yachtav, right, sets a certain tone. But family life, this is part of the larger context of family. The person gets married, right? So there's Bal v'Ishto, Hoyle Basar Echad, which we'll talk about also, right? Alkein Yazov, you know, Ish Esav v'Yesimo, V'Davak b'Ishto, right? But at the same time, this is very critical, and it's true, right? That young couple becomes part of two other families. And what's being emphasized here is that Yibum is connected to that. Ki yeshvu achim yachta. Mashal ma'ad over dome, again, I'll elaborate later, but the idea of ach shelo haya ba'olamo, has a parallel in Bechor l'nachla. And maybe it's not a coincidence that the Torah itself uses the expression of Bechor in this context too. The din is that a Bechor l'nachla does not get Pishnayim unless he's alive when the father's alive. In other words, if the father dies and the mother is pregnant and this child is born, even if he's a Bechor, he doesn't take Pishnayim. And the same thing is true about a Pashut. A Pashut who is born after the father died, is that memait mechelek habechor? The Gemara is in Yesh Nochah, Kuf Chav Zayin and Kuf Mem Beis. So I'm just throwing out the question. I'll try to explain more what I mean. That's a kind of a parallel that we care, not just that genetically, biologically, this is a brother or this is a child, but that he was living right in the environment of the family. They were all alive at the same time. Is there any clue in that? So kiyeshvu achim yachtav, I'm suggesting, might be an important tone setting in addition to the halachos that Rashi quotes from the Gemaras and the Medrash Halacha. I'm also maybe suggesting that those halachos themselves might be an important perspective on how Yibum may operate. Okay, so we'll get back to that. The lav, lo siya eshes hameis achutza l'izar, is also formulated in a very unusual fashion. If you want to say that she's an eshes ish, or shemeres yavam has an iser zika, right, the phrase eshes hameis, number one, she's still eshes hameis, the phrase of hachutza l'izar is just a very dramatic way of saying it. Moreover, who is this iser directed at? So I'm also showing the opinion, and it's certainly also directed, at some third party who would want to have a relationship with this woman. She's a Shomeres Yavam, right? So whether it's Eishes Ish, right, moderate, or some separate status based on the Zika, that's part of the Zika question, right, although she's being called Eishes Hameis here. Either way, the point is she's off limits, just like an Eishes Ish is off limits, with less dire consequences. What about she herself? Is she addressed, and does she get Malkus for this lav? Right, we'll discuss it, but that's a Machlokas Rishonim. The Chinuch has two deis about it, and other Rishonim weigh in on that issue. It's a very important question. More important, if you read the Psukim, are we addressing that would-be, you know, third party and her? Or is this really addressed to the brother? In which case, it's kind of a sensational pasuk. Number one, there's a din zika, right? And he's being told, lo siya eshes hameis achutza li'izar. Not only is there an iser mitzida and mitzad, the third party who would want to be involved with her, but this is part of the mechayiv of Yibum itself. So that the lab is connected with the aseh. Again, Rabbeinu Bechai in his Perush al HaTorah in Kiseitze doesn't make fuss about it, but he happens to learn it this way. I was looking for somebody to learn this way. And that could be very important. Again, it might be connected to the beginning. Ki yeshu achim yachtav, the family responsibility, right, with respect to the widow, right, of my deceased brother who had no children, right, is not to put her out into the street. Lotia Eishes Hameis Achutza Lizar isn't just since she has a Zika, therefore there's an Zika. It also means that. But maybe it's part of the reason why there's a Zika and why there's a Chiyuv Yibum. If that's true, right, that might affect also the dinim of this lav, which we'll get to. Okay. Then comes Yavama Yavo Aleha Ulekacha Lo Leisha V'Yibma. Right, surely a pact formulation. Again, this is all one pasuk. Number one, as the Mefarshim note, right, you have the phrase Yavama, and then it's followed by Yavo Aleha. Right? What does Yavama mean? And then, what's the relationship between Yavama, Yavo Aleha, and the last part of the pasuk, Ulekacha Lo Leisha, and then again, the Yibma. Why the repeated v'yibma? So on the Yavama level, Yavama, Yavo Aleha, v'yibma. Is Yavama a noun? Is it a verb? Is it both? And what's the relationship? That's one series of questions. Secondly, is ulekacha lo leisha v'yibma just the wider, you know, a little more garrulous explanation? Or this is a completely different idea? So several points to make. I'm running out of time. I'm just going to just remind me that this is where we stop. I just want to throw out three questions, and then, well, we haven't even finished the psukim, right? Oh, okay, but I'll have to stop here. Let me just throw out the questions of this pasuk. Okay. Number one is a discussion in the Rishonim. What does the term Yibum or Yavama mean? Well, we'll document it next time. Some Rishonim, Rabbi Yonah Ibn Janach is quoted by some of the Achronim, but it's already Ibn Ezra and others say that the word Yavama means sister-in-law. And they suggest, some of them, that V'yibma, right, is just she's her sister-in-law and there are no children. V'yibma means treat her like that kind of sister-in-law is supposed to be treated. In other words, right, the word really refers to the sister-in-law, and this is the natural consequence. There is a group of Rishonim, the Sfarno, the Chizkuni, who take the view that Yavama and V'yibma are meant to have opposite meanings. She's your sister-in-law, and your job is to make sure that she's no longer your sister-in-law. In other words, that's what we'll read it next time, but that's what the Sfarno here, for example, said. V'yibma, Yasiro sami yos od yavemto, avaltia ki ishto l'chol davar, afil l'garsha beget l'akzir. Emphasizing, and this is what I don't have the Chizkuni in this particular chumash. Chizkuni says it here, and he says it also in Bereishit. Sfarno also repeats it in Bereishit, meaning in Vayesha. Now, why is this important? I think it raises a very critical issue. Going back to our original question, which is, basically she has, you know, a status which you have to resolve, right? So she's your sister-in-law, and you know, that contradicts, you know, Dine Ishus, basically, an Erva, right? So the best way to resolve it is to resolve it and to get back to the conventional status of Ishus. So even if there's a Dechuya here and you're overriding some of the main institutions of the normal Dine Ishus, right? She's your sister-in-law. Do what you can to be Mesalik, the status of sister-in-law, as much as possible, as quickly as possible, and make her into your wife. Or, the way to look at Yibum is, she's your sister-in-law. And the Yibma isn't to make her not your sister-in-law. This is the Kiyum of Yavama. So that the shame Yavama, right, is the Yibum isn't Hafgas Yavama, it's the Kiyum of Yavama. In a sense, symbolically, these two opposite perspectives on how you look at the relationship between the noun and the verb, right? And what's going on here reflect the two ideas that we were talking about. Yibum is its own category and it celebrates, I don't know, celebrates maybe to, somebody died here, so, but life does go on, so there'll be a new happy marriage, hopefully. But the point is that it acknowledges and is a kiyum in the Shem Yavama. Or it's all about trying to regularize, do what you got to do, akama zera, or whatever, but as quickly as possible she should be ishto l'chol davar. In other words, according to one reading of the psukim, it's yivama yovalel l'kachal l'isha v'yibma, and l'kachal l'isha in this sense is the goal and the focus. Whereas the other perspective is, she's a yivama, there's a din of yibum for a yivama, not ishus, but it's betoras yivama. And that's the Gemara in Yavamah Staf Lamites. Ulkachal Isha means, don't think that once she's your wife, that she remains Yavama. And therefore, if you want to get rid of her, you give her chalitza. Interesting habamina. Gemara Lamites. Or maybe there's no dinamach. Let's say you divorce her. Maybe there's no dinamach zegrushaso because eishasach. This was just an exception, right? To be mekayim the dine yibum. Kamashmon, that's not true. No. Is there an echo of that kamashmala? In other words, in the end of the day, when ulkachal isha v'yibma, is it betoras yavama, or betoras isha, or a little bit of both? For example, in the Mishnayos, and some of the mefarshim in the Mishnayos point this out, we sometimes call her yavama after she's married. When, if ever, does she lose the shame yavama? And is the shame yavama inconsistent with ulkachal isha? Moreover, the mitzvah of Yibum and the consequence of a l'kachal alisha, the kinyan Yibum, are highlighted in this pasuk. Two different dinim? Or one integrated? And if so, what is the nature of this integration? The mitzvah of Yibum and the kinyan of Ishus. And with this we'll stop. The next word. V'hoya ha-bechara shorteled yakum al shem achiv ha-meis v'lo yimachesh shemo mi-Yisrael. So of course the factor of lo yimachesh shemo mi-Yisrael and yakum al shem achiv ha-meis, which needs to be understood. What do we mean by that conceptually and halachically? Right? He's dead, so what do we mean? Zecher? Is it something mystical? Is it something... Is it the Kedushin that continues, which is the Svarnos? Beautiful idea. And what do we mean by that? But also calling him HaBechor Asher Teled, here you have Machokas in the Sifrei and in the Gemara, whether this refers to the child, and to what extent is that child the child of the Nes? Machokas or Rishonim. You have to call him by that name, right? L'chatchilor b'di'eved. Is he more the Nes's child? What's the heir? What's the Onan? You know, what did Onan mean? The Chinuch's pshat, another pshatim. You know, is he Miksas Shalmeis? Is he Rubo Shalmeis? What do we mean by that? Right? But calling him, that's a simple pshat. We're talking about the Vlad. And what do we mean by that? Rashi here quotes the other view, Rabban as well, and that is that the Bechor Asher Teled refers to the brother. And this becomes the source for the question whether an older brother or a Bechor has some special yichus, which also we need to understand. But even more than that, why is he called Bechor? Right? If it isn't a Bechor. And does this have anything to do with what I said before, which is, Ki Yeshu Achim Yachtav, Achim Shelo Yabolamo, has its parallel in a din of Bechor. The fact that Bechor Karya, the Gemara says, Bechor Karya Rachmana, Ein Noto Baroi Kivamuchsak, the mission of Bechoros, right? If the brothers really has a status of Bechor, like what does that mean? And how does that fit into the rest of the parsha? And then, of course, after that comes the Chalitza part, which we'll read very quickly. So we'll try to go through quickly the rest of the Mar Makomos, and more specifically on Tuesday, and then I'll give you Mar Makomos for the continuation of the Hakdama. Okay.